17 arcs once. Let's reach out and grab it.
Yeah.
Together we'll nab it.
We'll hitchhike, bus, or yellow cabin.
Cabin?
Moving right along. Footloose and fancy free.
Getting there is half the fun. Come share it with me.
Moving right along.
We'll learn to share the load.
Summer presents an opportunity to pack up the car and head out on the road. Maybe go fishing, camp out, maybe get a room not far from the beach. And as Kermit and Fozzie know, getting there is half the fun. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. Today on the Afternoon Magazine, vacationing across the U.S. by automobile. We'll talk about great drives and great destinations. Our guest is Doug Stallings. He's an editor for Fodor's Guidebooks. Listeners, join us with your questions and comments. Maybe you have a tip to share about vacationing by car in the U.S. When you join us this afternoon, we'll get your name and number, and at the end of the hour, we'll draw a name. That individual will receive three useful guides from Fodor's: Great American Drives of the East, Great American Drives of the West, and National Parks of the West. Here are the telephone numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area: 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Doug Stallings, good afternoon. Welcome. Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Have you taken your vacation yet?
Summer is our busy time, and I don't often get to take a big, long summer driving tour. I'm going to go to Las Vegas fairly soon.
Okay. You know, well, then, sitting in the office there with your fellow editors and staff, I'm wondering if you guys have a moment or two during the day to kind of daydream about, gee, if we could take some time off, where would we go?
Well, it's surprising how often I find myself doing that, especially in the summer. Every time I think about driving, I think about the vacations I took when I was younger. Mm. We always drove from Kansas to California every summer when I grew up, and I kind of miss that.
Mm. Boy, that's a great time. You must have been able to see quite a lot of the country and be out there on the road for a couple weeks.
At least, yeah. Usually 2 or 3 weeks.
Wow, that's terrific. Well, what was your favorite stop along the way on that route when you were a kid?
The thing that I enjoyed the most, we always drove on I-40, and I think my favorite stop was the Petrified Forest in Arizona.
Hmm.
I love the petrified wood and seeing everything, and there's petroglyphs there too, so it's historical as well as a sort of a geological site.
Yeah, very interesting. We have a listener ready to talk with us already, so let's go and talk with this caller on line one, someone here on the campus of the University of Illinois. Good afternoon.
When I was growing up in the East Coast, we used to take a drive every fall up the coastline to look at Lees from Connecticut up through Maine. And that was years ago when I was a kid. We're moving back out that way, my husband and I. It's the first time he's been out there. And I was wondering if you could recommend a good drive to go do that with him.
That's a good question. Almost any place you drive in the Northeast, sort of north of the Westchester County in New York, is going to be really vibrant and alive with leaves in the fall. It's one of the, I would say, probably the biggest thing going on up in New England, sort of after the middle of or the beginning of October on, until everything falls off. And the best thing to do is actually to find a place that you would like to maybe spend the night, and then just to drive up into Vermont or New Hampshire. Once you find a nice bed and breakfast, and it's hard to get reservations up there, so you have to plan that trip ahead. Almost any place you drive is really beautiful. If you want to make the drive up into the White Mountains, I think that's one of the nicest parts of the Northeast. At least of the parts that I've seen, I think the White Mountains in New Hampshire are really beautiful, and that's what I'd recommend.
Okay, very good. I hope that is helpful for our caller this afternoon. You know, Doug, the guides that we're giving away this afternoon, they include a vacation countdown, and it's a checklist to help plan the vacation. And some things are going to be obvious, you know, devise a budget and arrange for house sitting and that kind of thing. But there are some tips that aren't so obvious. And this came into my mind as we were talking with our first caller this afternoon. You know, what do you want to do, and are you going to need reservations? How popular is a place? And if you want to do something special, you're going to need to think about making reservations weeks, sometimes months ahead, right?
That's very true. I mean, if you want to spend a particularly busy time in, say, a famous national park lodge, you might have to make your reservation 6 or 8 months in advance. If you want to stay at something like one of the big lodges in Yosemite or one of the main lodges at the Grand Canyon. If you don't care where you stay, if it's just a matter of finding a place to put your head down for the night, it's usually not as much of a problem. It's really if you want to stay in a bed and breakfast, a grand old hotel, or someplace that's very famous. You do have to plan a little bit more ahead, though.
Yeah. Or if you want to see a concert or go to a special restaurant.
Exactly.
Same kind of advice holds.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going, well, Santa Fe is busy any time, but if you want to go during the opera season, you've got to make your reservations in advance.
Yeah.
And it's good to know what the most popular big events are, you know, in the area are, and to sort of either plan for them or plan around them.
Yeah. A tip that goes hand in hand with this is the tip, brainstorm 5 must-dos. So you're thinking about what you really want to do, and that'll help you determine what kind of reservations or whatnot you need to do before you head out.
I think a lot of people, when they set out on a car trip especially, they don't really have in mind what it is they want to get out of the trip. And I don't think you need to plan every moment of every day by any means, but it's really important to know what it is you want to accomplish on your trip. You wouldn't go off to Italy without any idea of what you want to see over there. And it's just as important if you're driving around the United States.
Hmm. Let's talk with another listener, this one on the toll-free line in Eureka. Good afternoon.
Hi, very interesting topic. I wonder if you could suggest some economical getaways. I guess I was thinking in maybe Minnesota, Michigan, Wisconsin, say within 400 or 500 miles of, say, Bloomington, Illinois, which is, I guess, one of the larger cities that I'm near to.
Okay, that's a nice question. If we don't have a lot of time, and
yeah, I realize.
Yeah, if you're traveling and if you don't have a lot of time, and maybe you know you're watching your pennies.
Well, I think that if you're trying to conserve your money and your time, it's always a good idea to stay fairly close to home. I mean, there's no problem with doing that. In our book, Great American Drives of the East, we recommend several drives sort of in the general vicinity of the Illinois-Indiana area. We've got one drive that we recommend, that just to drive up the coast of Lake Michigan in Wisconsin, starting in Kenosha, which is it's right across the border, mm-hmm. and to go all the way up to the very tip and then go back down to Green Bay and work your way back down the coast again. And you can do that in the summer if you're careful on where you stay and where you eat, fairly inexpensively. Mm-hmm. And then you can also just explore Illinois itself. One of our other drives is through the northwestern corner of the state, and it's mostly a pretty place.
Galena area?
Yeah, we recommend it for the fall foliage season.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good place to see the leaves turn, especially if you're not going to be in the Northeast where it's famously beautiful. I think it can be just as beautiful in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly found that when I was growing up. I mean, northeastern Oklahoma, which is near where I grew up, is every bit as pretty in the fall as some of the parts of the Northeast,
mm-hmm.
which are much more famous for the fall foliage.
Okay.
You can also go and do more of a historical tour. We recommend another drive in sort of the southwestern part of Illinois to go see the Indian mounds in Cahokia,
mm-hmm.
and then to drive down around some of the more historic forts and towns down in the southern part of the state.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you could do that very inexpensively, too. I mean, there's no big cities and there's no big, huge tourist attractions that are going to drive up prices down there.
Would you have anything on the Upper Peninsula of Michigan?
We don't recommend a particular drive up there in our book, but just the area. I know that you can go up to. Let's see. I don't know the Upper Peninsula of Michigan very well.
It's beautiful country.
Quite wild.
Yeah, and I think especially in the summer it's very beautiful. I know you can drive up to like Mackinac Island, but you can't drive on it. And that's a big. And that's not going to be a cheap destination, but it's a very popular one in the summer.
Yeah, my experience in the Upper Peninsula is that the only time you really have to be careful about reservations in terms of lodging and the like is during hunting season. But there's some beautiful places in the Upper Peninsula. I'm trying to think. There's a beautiful state park, Tequamanon Falls. Is there in the UP, and lovely waterfalls, kind of unexpected, really. And that's kind of an inland destination. But the UP is small enough that you can really cover a lot of territory and have a great time. Very inexpensive, too, at least when I was there a few years back.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for the call this afternoon. Let's talk with another listener on line one in Wellington. Good afternoon.
Yes, as you was just talking about Mackinac Island, we were just there day tripping a couple weeks ago, and it is not a cheap place to visit, but very interesting and beautiful. But if you want someplace that take a family that's very nice and relatively inexpensive, I would recommend Devil's Lake State Park outside of Baraboo, Wisconsin. My brother lived in the tourist trap of Wisconsin Dells for several years, and we always look for inexpensive places to go besides the strip and what have you, or the kids spent a fortune, and we just stumbled on this park, and it's beautiful there. It's got a lake that's about a mile long, a half mile wide. There's a lot of hiking. You can camp there, and you can, there's no boating allowed. Well, sailboats are allowed only on the lake there, and you can rent canoes, windsurfers, that sort of thing there. And it's just a beautiful place. And inside of Baraboo, there's the Circus World Museum, which is quite interesting. And there's a railway museum in North Freedom, which is only a few miles outside of Baraboo, that's also quite interesting. And it's just a generally beautiful park, just really beautiful there.
Okay, and they have places you can camp?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, yes. Great. Well, thanks for the tip.
Uh-huh.
And let's talk with another listener on Line 2 in Champaign. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi.
I don't know much about the Apostle Islands up in Wisconsin, but I've heard they're beautiful. This is just in reference to the caller that called a couple minutes ago about Michigan, Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just an option for him to look at. I know that they have a lot of beautiful lighthouses and little islands that you can hop to on boats, and it's really great in the summertime.
Okay. Well, thanks for that advice.
Sure.
As well. Doug, you want to add anything in terms of Baraboo area and Apostle Islands?
Well, I've never been there. I wish I could add something. I've never been to Wisconsin. It's one of the few states that I've never been in. One good source of information for everybody if they're looking for a particularly scenic place in almost any state is the National Scenic Byways Program. That's sponsored by the Transportation Department, and what they've done is they've taken the most scenic, most beautiful roads in every state and sort of put them together into this program, and then this year they've added, I think, 36 new ones. Some of these they call National Scenic Byways, some they call Great American Roads, and they're the places that have brought us together and brought us across the country. And a lot of them are historic places. A lot of them are scenic roads. And there are places in almost every state. And there's a website where people can go to find out where they are in any particular location. It's www.byways.org. And that might be a good way to look and find a good scenic drive if you want to go to a specific part of a specific state.
Mm-hmm.
It links to a lot of the state programs. A lot of states maintain their own scenic byways programs, and it's a good source of information.
Yeah. And also a great way to get off the interstate.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
I mean, you can always have AAA also chart you the scenic route if you want to go to a particular place, and that can be very useful, too.
Yeah, good idea. Let's talk with another caller on the toll-free line in Paris. Good afternoon.
Yes, I've been enjoying the program. I was wondering, could you give me some ideas on scenic things or things to do or things that you enjoy doing in East Tennessee?
Well, I think probably the best thing to do in East Tennessee, I mean, there's a lot of tourist attractions there. But if you get into the Great Smoky Mountains, I think that's the best part of the state. I mean, the best part of the eastern part of Tennessee. And you can dip down into North Carolina, and the area is just absolutely beautiful. Some of the area, I think, around Pigeon Forge is really overdeveloped and touristy, but you can get out of that right away. It's not hard to get out of it. You might have to stay there. There aren't many motels and places to stay in sort of the national park itself. But I think that's the best place to head if you're in that part of the state.
I just kind of wanted the area that you enjoyed there. Okay, thank you. Thank you so
Thanks
much.
For the call this afternoon. Other questions, comments are invited. The numbers to call? Well, if you're in the Champaign-Urbana area, the number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, you can call us toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. We're talking this afternoon about great drives and great destinations. Our guest is Doug Stallings. He's an editor for Fodor's Guidebooks. And listeners, when you join us this afternoon with a question or comment, maybe a tip to share about vacationing by car in the U.S., we'll get your name and number when you phone in, and at the end of the hour, we'll draw a name, and that individual will receive three useful guides from Fodor's: Great American Drives of the East, Great American Drives of the West, and National Parks of the West. Doug Stallings, our guest this afternoon. My name is Celeste Quinn. Let's go back to that idea of when we were kids and we went on vacation, and what a wonderful time it was to be out on the road and visiting places like the Petrified Forest and the like. There's a drive in the Great American Drives of the West that I think would be fun if you were a kid, and that is New Mexico on the Trail of Billy the Kid. Where will that drive take us?
It's mostly in the south central part of the state, that particular drive. And this is actually one of the National Scenic Byways. It's called the Billy the Kid National Scenic Byway. Starts in Las Cruces, which is down, sort of way down, almost to the southern border of the state, and takes you through White Sands, which is really interesting. I mean, if you've never seen anything like it, you don't often get to see flowing white sand dunes anywhere, and that's a real sight. And then it goes up into the mountains and stops at some of the places where Billy the Kid hung out before his untimely demise.
So I imagine while the hook would be for the kids, Billy the Kid, for grown-ups, the scenery has got to be spectacular.
Yeah, I mean, this particular drive goes up through Cloudcroft, which I think is probably one of the prettiest places in all of New Mexico. It's up in the mountains, and it's just really, it's not what you expect to see in New Mexico. But you see a lot of the, you know, the more expected parts down by White Sands as well. But there are a lot of, you know, both historic and scenic sites. And I think it can be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Let's talk with some other listeners. Next, we're going to go to a caller on line one, calling us from a cell phone this afternoon. Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. I wanted to get a couple of licks in for the Smoky Mountains National Park and some areas down there that I'm familiar with. And it's such a beautiful area, and the cultural history is so rich, as well as the natural history. Folks are in Gatlinburg, the easiest way to see the park quickly and a drive-through is the Roaring Forks Nature Drive. It's a one-way loop. The Park Service has moved historic structures from the park along this one-way loop on the edge of the park on the Gatlinburg side, and in a two-hour drive with a picnic lunch, and you can stop and walk. And so folks that don't really want to get into backpacking and do the whole major thing, I can take a leisurely drive and see it at a slower pace with a lot of other stuff, or just a quick drive through. It's a great way to introduce yourself to the park. And then in terms of communities, on the other side, on the North Carolina side of the park, Bryson City, North Carolina, is sort of like Gatlinburg may have been 30, 40 years ago or longer. It's a much less developed community, and it's also a gateway to Deep Creek Campground. And that's a beautiful place. And then Fontana Village was built to help build the Fontana TVA Dam down there, and it's the old community that was built at that time, and it's still a very sort of rustic, old-fashioned vacation getaway. It's very hard to reach on Route 19. It's a twist and turn on highway, but it's just an absolute beautiful vacation for someone that wants to see a wonderful place in an old-fashioned kind of way. So I just wanted to kick that in for y'all.
Okay, thanks for that call this afternoon. Other calls are welcome, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455. Another listener waits for us on the toll-free line in Effingham on line 4. Good afternoon.
Hi, I was going to echo the previous caller's suggestion.
Really?
Very strange, but I would just add to, while in that area, the Bryson City Silva, that's a lot less commercialized than Pigeon Forge and Cherokee, which we drive by fast, check out Dry Falls, which is in the Cashier area. You'd find it on a map. It's a waterfall that you can actually walk behind, and it's just very beautiful. And it was in the movie The Last of the Mohicans, that was the area that they used to stage that movie.
Okay. Thanks for the call this afternoon. Boy, our listeners are well-traveled and have lots of nice tips to share this afternoon. Let's talk with another caller. Line 2, a listener in Urbana. Hi.
Hi. I'm a recently retired teacher, and this fall will be my first opportunity to take a vacation in the fall. We're planning on going to visit a friend in Boston and then driving into New Hampshire at about the peak of the fall season, and I'm just interested in what you might have to say about where we should probably go.
Okay, Doug?
Well, that's a good question. I think one of the nice things about New Hampshire is that it's really not a very big state, but it's very varied in the scenery. I mean, you have everything from pretty high mountains up in parts of the state in the north to, you know, the seashore on the southeast, and it's very varied. But you can see foliage almost anywhere, and it depends on, I think mostly when you're going to New Hampshire in the fall, it really depends on where you can get a reservation to stay if you're going to be in the area. And that can be, I think New Hampshire is really beautiful almost anywhere you go. So I don't think you'll be disappointed in any particular place.
Good. we luckily do have some reservations. It's close to Jackson. I think that's the name of it. And we're going to be there during the middle of a week, so that made it a little easier.
Mm-hmm. I think that's up by the White Mountains or in the White Mountains.
Yes.
And then you won't be disappointed. That's one of the most beautiful parts of this, one of the most beautiful parts of the entire Northeast.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So you're going to have a lovely time.
Well, good. Thank you.
Okay, have a great time. That's a good tip, you know, to think about the middle of the week as opposed to the week.
Yeah, it is.
Oh.
Weekends are hard, especially in the Northeast, when people really like to escape from the cities. And we've got more cities than a lot of places do. And the Northeast really isn't all that big. So people dash up from Boston. They dash up from Philadelphia and New York and sort of take over all of the bed and breakfasts.
Let's talk with another caller in Greenup on the toll-free line, line 4. Good afternoon.
Hello. I'll be motoring to northern Arkansas. Are there any places you would recommend?
Well, I'm actually kind of partial to northern Arkansas. That's not far from where I'm from. I think that the Ozarks are really one of the prettiest parts of that whole part of the country. And you can go to Harrison, which is really like the most highly developed part of that of the northern Arkansas. Are you going to be in like the Little Rock area, or are you going to be more up
north?
More north of that?
Yes.
Then I would say, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on around Harrison. That's not far from Branson. I mean, if that interests you, I mean,
yes.
Branson is really, really something, and it's something everybody should see at least once in their life. And if you like country music, it's a great place to be. It's a little frenetic for me. There's always too much going on and too much traffic, though.
We'll go through the week.
You'll be going during the week?
Yes, through the week, not on the weekend.
Okay,
are
that should make it a little easier.
Train trips would be interesting.
Train trip.
In Arkansas.
That's harder. I don't know of any train trips up in that area. I bet there's something up in the Harrison-Branson area, but I don't know. There are a lot of lakes and a lot of hills, and gosh.
How is the driving or the highways?
The driving on the highways won't be so bad if you get out of the major. You know, if you stay off of the big interstates, it's not going to be so bad until you get up in the, like, up toward closer to Branson, and then it gets a lot heavier.
All right, thank you.
Okay, thanks for the call this afternoon. Have a good time. I noticed in the Great American Drives of the West, because Branson is so well known, I guess you folks figured, well, we'll leave it out.
It's not a place that I'd want to send people to go driving, though.
Yeah, okay.
It is a beautiful area, though, and it's beautiful to drive around there. You know, it's just, it's very hard when you try to, you know, put together a drive that will, you don't want to have people tied up in traffic all the time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, looks
so
like
you
there's
try to send people away from all those areas to some degree.
In northern Arkansas, although this is further west or central, Ozark National Forest looks like that could be lovely.
Arkansas has a lot of nice state parks, too, and there are a lot of good cabins where you can, you know, sort of hole up for a while. And they have all the conveniences of home. They're not that rustic. They've got everything you might need to keep house, and it's a nice place to settle down if you want to explore the area for a few days.
Yeah. National parks, national forests in the Middle West, and are they easier to make arrangements for than, say, the national parks and forests out west?
Well, you know, it really depends. There aren't that many. The Midwest is sort of an interesting place because there aren't nearly as many national forests and national parks as there are in the western U.S.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of the national park sites in the Midwest are historic sites, so they're more individual things to look at. The national forests, I don't think it's any harder, really, to make reservations to go out west. You just have more people going.
Hmm.
You can even get reservations right now at the Grand Canyon.
Really?
Yeah, right now.
Okay.
It might be a little harder in Yosemite, particularly on the weekend, but if you can even go to the most popular parks in the West and get a place to stay nearby. I was thinking of popping up to Zion National Park when I go out to Las Vegas, and I checked just a couple of weeks ago, and there were still several nice places to stay in the area, not the actual park lodge, but nice places where I could stay and still get reservations a couple of weeks ago when I'm going in August, which is a very busy time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think people sometimes, you know, they may shy away from some of the parts of the West, and they're not that hard to get reservations. If you want to go to a very popular place, the thing is to plan a couple of months in advance, and you can almost always find a place to stay.
Yeah. Now, when you're going to take this little side trip, how are you going to decide what you're going to do in that time that you're going to spend in the park? Because there's so much. There's so many possibilities.
Well, there are. I mean, the nice thing, I guess I'm lucky in a way in going to Zion, because in Zion, they've got a program to try to reduce traffic in the canyon itself, and you can just park your car by the main lodge and the main park headquarters, and then there's a shuttle bus that will take you on a guided tour of the canyon, and you can do that in just a few hours. Or you can get out along the way and go hiking. I'll actually be with my parents, and they're not really much hikers. But that makes Zion very easy to visit. A lot of the parks are very user-friendly. But even if you want, you know, if you want to get away from the crowds, you can go to a very popular place, and if you're willing to walk 10 or 15 minutes, not heavy hiking, but just walk, you know, gently along the trail, you'll find yourself in a part of a forest where there's nobody around. You just have to put a little more effort into it if you go to a busy place like Yellowstone or Yosemite.
Mm-hmm. What kind of opportunities are there for folks who really want to get out into the wilderness and camp? Do you have to have special permits to do that in national parks?
In national parks, you always have to have some sort of a permit.
Okay.
If the park is very busy, they might have some sort of a control in terms of the numbers of people they allow to hike in the backcountry.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of parks, it's not a problem at all. A lot of people do bring their RVs in to camp in places like Grand Canyon and Death Valley in the spring and the late fall and the winter. And then you sometimes have a hard time finding a place. And you can make reservations for the main campgrounds. And if you write off in advance, you can get permission and passes to hike and camp in the backcountry where they don't have the developed sites, but you just take in all your own stuff and find a place to camp and stay there.
Yeah. My suspicion would be that mid-June through Labor Day, peak visiting times for national parks.
Absolutely. And I'd say actually from Memorial Day through Labor Day.
Really? Okay.
Some of the schools now, you know, that get out before Memorial Day, people are traveling even by then. Memorial Day weekend itself is always busy, especially around the lakes and places like that. But it's a big camping weekend as well for a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, as you mentioned in the guide, National Parks of the West, you know, winter comes early and stays late in many of these parks. I know that somebody here at the station went to Glacier early this summer, and going to the Sun Road was not open yet.
Yeah, I think sometimes it doesn't open until maybe late in May, even in some parts.
Yeah.
But a lot of the roads, you'll have snow up through May, at least the early part of May. Sometimes it dissipates in April. It depends on the winter, of course. I mean, some years you're going to be able to get through a little earlier. And then a lot of the parks close around early to mid-October. The North Rim of the Grand Canyon closes, I think, the third week of October usually. And that's usually when you can't get there anymore because of snow.
Hmm. That sounds pretty good to tell you right now. It's awfully warm here. We're under a heat advisory, and it's 92 degrees at this hour in Urbana. I was wondering about national parks in the wintertime. Obviously, things are going to be scaled back, but what kind of opportunities are there for enjoying winter in the national parks?
You know, there are actually a lot of opportunities to enjoy the winter, you know, wintertime activities. I think one of the most popular things to do in the national parks in the winter is to go cross-country skiing in the parks that have snow.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the national parks will grade the roads. They won't plow them, but they'll just grade them so that you can ski through very easily. And you can do that in most of the parks up in the northern parts of the West, all the way through the winter. I think for most parks, there are at least parts that are accessible throughout the year. The roads between Yellowstone and Grand Tetons are closed, but parts of the parks are accessible year-round. Although I can't say that I recommend Yellowstone in the winter. I think it's just totally spoiled by the snowmobiles.
Oh, yeah. Boy, you'd think, you know, that wintertime would be an opportunity to really enjoy the quiet and go snowshoeing or cross-country skiing, and didn't even think about snowmobiles.
Well, you know, there are certainly parts of Yellowstone. I mean, it's a big park, and the snowmobiles really heavily go into that, the area around Old Faithful. And so I think that that's probably the worst part of the park in the winter. But you can get, you know, 30 miles from there and have absolute and complete silence. And that's nice. But the noise from the snowmobiles really carries. And I think that's a real detriment. It's a shame that the, you know, that the new administration is allowing those to keep going.
That and
jet skis are the two things that I like the least.
Well, I'm with you on that, but I know that for some people that's a great deal of fun and they really enjoy themselves. It's just that there's so many of them.
I know, and it is fun. I mean, I can't deny that.
Yeah,
I've been on a jet ski, and it's a lot of fun. It's very exhilarating to be whooshing along at 30 miles an hour.
In the wintertime, in and around national parks, what's the lodging situation like?
Well, some of the park lodges that are deep inside the parks are closed, but there are usually towns on the periphery where you can get lodging for most parks year-round. There are some places that close, but a lot of places are open year-round anymore. It just depends on where you are, and it's sort of on a case-by-case basis. And I think that some of the more remote places are harder because they just get snowed in so much.
There's
not anything anybody can do about that. But there are developed areas on the peripheries of most of the national parks and where people live and work, and those places are open, you know, year-round. They're close to interstate highways, and I mean, it's surprising how accessible some of the places are when you least expect it.
Yeah. Some years ago, I took the train across that part of the country up the Empire Builder, and the scenery is just spectacular from western Montana through Idaho and into Washington State. And I would imagine that, well, if Amtrak's still around, but I would imagine that that would be something you could do in the wintertime as well, is get to a destination, then get on the train and, you know, start in West Glacier and maybe go to, what's the point in Idaho there that I'm trying to think of?
You know, I'm not sure.
But anyway, and then, you know, you could go into the, get back on the train and get into the Cascades. It's just, the scenery is spectacular.
It is. You know, I don't know if that particular train runs year-round or not.
Oh, okay.
It's a good question. Sometimes they have the same problems with the train tracks getting overrun by snow. I'm not sure. I was just looking to see if we actually say that in the book, and I don't see it. It's a good question.
Maybe while you take another moment to look for that, I'll reintroduce us and offer our listeners one more opportunity to join us this afternoon with questions and comments. We have about 6-7 minutes left in this portion of the program. Listeners, if you've got a question about driving for taking a vacation by automobile, give us a call this afternoon. Great drives and great destinations, our topic this afternoon. Our guest is Doug Stallings, an editor for Fodor's Guidebooks, and we're giving some guides away this afternoon to a lucky listener who joins us this afternoon with a question or comment. The numbers in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455. Any definitive answer on the train in the winter in that part of the country?
You know, I don't have a definitive answer.
Okay.
So I wish I did. I'm sorry.
I'm sure that that's a question that's easily enough answered by going
on.
You can
go on Amtrak's website. Yep. It'll probably say whether the service is seasonal or not.
Yeah, very good.
The thing that a lot of people don't know is that Glacier National Park sort of abuts, I think it's Waterton National Park in Canada, and some parts of the Canadian park may be more accessible even by train in the winter. That's another good possibility. We don't really cover that part of the Canadian part in our book, But there is that Trans-Canadian Railway, and I think it goes through that area, so you may be able to get up there as well. That's another, you know, another possibility.
Okay. Let's talk with another listener in Champaign on line one. Good afternoon.
Earlier from Bloomington asked about places in northern Wisconsin or Wisconsin, and one fine area is up north of Rhinelander in Wisconsin, and from there you can go up to the upper peninsula of Michigan, the very western part of it, and on up into the Keweenaw Peninsula, which takes you at the end of the peninsula is Copper Harbor. That is a beautiful, beautiful area to explore, and all of that northern area in Wisconsin, above Rhinelander, Minocqua, Woodruff, all Eagle River, all of that area is very beautiful. Another area closer is the Shawnee National Forest in southern Illinois, and you don't think perhaps of beautiful places in Illinois, but that area is spectacular in many, many respects, and I certainly recommend that.
Okay, very good. Thanks for those suggestions. And let's talk with another listener here before we're out of time. Line two, caller in Urbana. Good afternoon.
Hi. I'd just like to throw my two cents in here on the places to go. One thing I like to do is go to places that are technically semi-closed, like maybe the visitor center will be closed and some of the other things, but you can still go into them. Because usually I find you'll go to those places and there won't be a soul there. You can have the whole place to yourself. You just don't get all the amenities of the visitor center and maybe guides and that kind of thing. But yet you can still get out on foot and see the places. And it's just unbelievable how many people would normally be there during the season. And then you go there and it's just empty, and you can really enjoy it a lot better. So that's kind of what I do. I'll seek out places that are completely out of season. And it's just a whole different perspective on the whole place.
Yeah.
Rather than fight the crowds, and you can just stand there and be in awe of all the scenery all by yourself.
Mm-hmm. Any?
That's all I wanted to tell you.
Okay, well, thanks for that call this afternoon. Doug, you have a favorite destination or two off-season that you really like?
That's a good question. I think that of the really popular places, like of the national parks, the Grand Canyon is the best place to go in the winter. There aren't nearly as many people. And The weather there is fairly moderate. It's not it doesn't get desperately cold on the south rim, or at least not as you might expect. I mean, it's a little higher up, but it's still in Arizona, and that's a nice, you know, a great time to go.
Mm-hmm.
It's harder. I don't know. In the east, I think it's a little harder. The really popular parks are very popular indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Even the parts that aren't, like the Great Smoky Mountains, I think are much nicer in the early spring and the fall, but they're much busier in the summer when the weather is the worst. Or for me, the heat really does it to me. You can go like to places like Death Valley that are totally overrun with people in the spring, and not surprisingly, not very busy at all in the summer.
And, you know, even some of the very popular places in the Midwest that are popular getaway spots, I'm thinking of Wisconsin. Door County is lovely, but in the high season, you know, it's got to be like a parking lot up there. But in the fall, it's just lovely. In the late fall, in October and November.
You know, the Finger Lakes in New York, in sort of middle New York State, are a very nice place to go in the fall. They're very, very busy in the summer with vacationers. But if you can go in the fall before it starts snowing, it's really pretty up there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that I think your caller has a point. There are certainly places, summertime destinations, particularly watery destinations, can be very nice to visit in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see the Outer Banks maybe in North Carolina sometime in the winter. Mm-hmm. It's very, very mild, and I'd like to see what it's like when there aren't so many people around.
Yeah. Well, happy trails, Doug. Have a great time on your vacation to Las Vegas and to Zion National Park.
Thank you very much.
Doug Stallings has been our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. He's an editor for Fodor's guidebooks.